Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I'll be the first to admit that I used to be a major asshole. I used to make a living as an armed robber. No joke. And I was mostly targeting big chains with cash that was on site. This is sort of a confession. Their employees never gave a crap to really do anything, whereas you rob a mom and pop shop, and you tend to get less mom and more pop, 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 if you know what I mean. I'm trying to make light of it, but either way, I rob places because I was addicted to heroin. I did just about anything and everything I could get my hands on, but my main thing was H, and to get it, I had to roll with some pretty terrible people. It wasn't so bad if I was around my home turf. I knew the right places to go and the right people to talk to. But whenever I was off on business, which tended to be frequent as you don't want to poop where you eat, as they say, I had to attach myself to certain other folks if I wanted to get what I needed.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
And I mean it, man. I rolled with some very scary dudes back in the day, but none as scary as Tyran and Lash DeFore. The one and only time I met one of them was when I was down in Georgia, running drugs for some biker gang down there. The DeFores used to make this really killer meth, military-grade shit, but they only ever sold in bulk from this compound that they had out in the sticks, and they only ever met you in this one place, away from their cookhouse so no one could find it. It was hard to get a hold of them, even harder to put an order in for a shipment, as they usually sold everything to this group of guys down in Florida to keep their profile low. But this one time, I get told to drive out to that drop site and wait until either Tyran or Lash showed up with the shipment. And so, I drive out to the place, wait there a while, and then this big shirtless dude comes walking out of the woods carrying a backpack. The dude is covered in tattoos with what looked like a really bad hair dye job, but what I later learned was the fumes from him cooking so much bleaching his hair. Anyway, he walks up, looking like I'm something that he found on his shoe, and we make the exchange before he starts asking about people that I'd never even heard of. And the dude was completely whacked out on something, because he kept, like, staring at me in confusion whenever I'd say, "Dude, I don't know who you're talking about here, sorry." He seemed like mad at first, like I was lying to him or something, but then on his last name he just started laughing as if to be like, "Whatever, dude." And after that he walked off back into the woods to wherever the hell his compound was, and I drove back to the shop to drop the shipment and collect my payment. A couple of hours later, I'm linking up with a buddy of mine to score some H when I start telling him about the creepy spacey dude that I met out in the woods. The second I get to telling him about this guy's tattoos, he starts asking if I knew the guy's name. Then when I told him it was either Tyran or Lash, he starts making faces as if to say, "Hot damn, you just walked into the lion's den and only got out again by the grace of God." And my buddy then goes about telling me about everything he knows about the DeFore brothers, and everything he'd heard anyway. So these Dufour brothers lived out there in the woods in some hidden compound that they'd built with their own hands, completely off the grid. It was just a lab cookhouse at first and all the necessary equipment, but I guess they got sick of driving to and from all the time and decided to just live out there full time so they could work whatever they wanted to, day or not, without any interruptions whatsoever. And according to the guy I hooked up afterwards to score some H with, the way the Dufour brothers guaranteed no interruptions was to booby trap the surrounding area with the kinds of stuff that you only see in Vietnam movies. Spike pits, swing and trigger traps, and they even had tripwire grenades strung up in the trees where only Lash or Tyran could see them. I was told that every so often a deer would trigger one of the traps, and that mostly that's how they got their food. But to keep the people at bay, the Dufours had to get a little more creative. The devil traps, I heard them called bird traps too, they look like those little stickmen things from the Blair Witch movie. I don't know how creepy people would find them these days, that movie's 25 years old now, but they sure would have worked on anyone who'd seen that movie. I remember listening to all that and thinking, sure, they sound dangerous, but at least they just want to be left alone. Well, the Dufour brothers did want to be left alone, but only during working hours. The trouble was, they weren't exactly the men-about-town types. Both had multiple warrants, so they couldn't exactly stroll into town for a few cocktails without cops throwing their butts in jail. So instead of going to the party, the Dufours brought the party to them. And they were swimming in cash. Crystal, they sold LSD, so they used to get a whole bunch of girls out there to spend a few days with them whenever they wanted to party. Professionals, you know what I'm saying? They were there to smoke bowls and get paid, but they always got way, way more than they bargained for. No girl ever went twice. They wouldn't. They had to get these new girls in, ignorant ones, or ones who knew that they could spend a few days getting high as a kite, if they could only put up with Tyran and Lash's proclivities, I'll just say. My buddy said that he didn't know exactly what they used to get up to, but that he had heard from one girl that the Dufour brothers liked scaring girls that they had delivered to him. They used to dose him up with a bunch of drugs, and then do all kinds of things to him, try to make him lose their minds. I heard some really weren't ever the same again, and that some of them disappeared afterwards, wanting to get as far away from the Dufour brothers as possible. I heard they were into some weird religious stuff out there too, something like Santeria, but probably a lot more like devil worship by the sounds of it. Supposedly, Lash and Tyran used to get high as hell, light fires, cut the heads off of animals they trapped, and then drink the blood in these messed up, meth-fueled ritual-type binges. They had all kinds of old books lying around on witchcraft and Satanism and how you can, like, open up portals with your mind if you think on it real hard. All kinds of crazy crap like that. I think Lash had all sorts of devil tattoos, too. Like, it wasn't just a style thing for him. They really believed it. I mean, they always said those boys were crazy. And with all the drugs and crystal meth out there, I can believe they smoked themselves onto another friggin' planet. Another time, someone had to go back to their compound for some reason, and after avoiding all the booby traps and all of that, they found Lash Dufour had a friend with him. Whoever it was hadn't seen this new friend around before, which was weird because it was usually only people they really trusted that ever saw the compound, and he'd been working with them for a year by then, so that was to be expected. But then, to see this young-looking kid, maybe 19 or 20, sitting there all whacked out looking like he was having a bad trip, that gave our visitor all kinds of bad vibes, especially when he saw how Lash was messing with him.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
The kid didn't seem like he was having fun at all, and he even got up and tried to get away. Lash just started laughing, tripped the kid up, and then threw him back on their outdoor couch before telling him to stay put. Lash was always messing with people like that. I mean, he loved doing it with hookers, and he'd do it with his friends too. And the only thing was, the kid's face was on the news for weeks afterwards. It went missing and never showed up again. Then there was this one time these two guys tried screwing the DeFore brothers over. Very sly, too, slipping him a few fake bills into a stack. Anyway, it didn't slip by them, but instead of going after him and taking what was theirs up front, the DeFore brothers pretended not to notice. They went along with it, really made the guys that they were selling to, making them think that they were idiots. And then one day, the boys invite their business partners over for a few drinks, and no one ever sees them again. I heard Tyran still talks about their skulls, like he gets all messed up on whatever they got over there and then just stares at them, laughing sometimes like they're telling him jokes that no one else can hear. After my buddy finishes telling me about the DeFore brothers, I think about every hair on my body was stood up on end, knowing I'd avoided a similar fate to some of the other poor folks that had made it out near their compound. Made me real glad that I only ever had to deal with them that one time. Because, get on those boys' bad side, and I don't think I'd ever gone anywhere near the state of Georgia ever again. There's some real psychos out there in the world, and the less time you spend around them, the better.
Hey guys, thanks so much for all the support. If you haven't subscribed to the channel yet, please feel free to do so.
I grew up in Ohio in the 70s, and me and my childhood friend Joe were outside all the time we could manage it. Joe lived on a farm that bordered a pretty big forest, and my parents would drop me off in the morning, and we'd stay in the woods all weekend. We'd only come out for school. We loved pretending we were frontiersmen. We'd build shelters, traps, practice making fire with sticks, the whole nine yards. When we got to be in high school, we got the notion to pull a Stand By Me. This is based in movie of the same name that just come out. The idea was that we'd walk the railroad track out into the country, but instead of looking for a body, we'd find cool bridges to fish from, and a camp a little ways off the tracks. Of course, we knew this was dangerous and we'd likely be trespassing, but we were kids. We had a lot of fun. We did find beautiful rivers. We discovered bridges. No one went till we fished. We hid from the trains. At night, we camped in the woods just near the tracks and made small hidden fires. Nothing bad ever happened. It was idyllic. In fact, it was so fun. We did it multiple times, never had a problem. After high school, me and Joe went our own ways. We both left home, but always stayed in touch and always tried to coordinate visits so we'd each see each other occasionally. Well, one summer in the mid-90s, it worked out that we were both in town for about a week. We'd do stuff with family in the day, and at night we'd either catch drinks at a bar or sit outside Joe's house around a fire and talk about the old days. One night, Joe and I got to talking about our Stand By Me trips, Belness Bills Your Beer, a heck of a mix. Soon, we decided to take a day, walk the rails camp one night, and walk home. The day came. We started out early morning. We had my wife drop us off in our old spot where we used to start right outside her hometown. She thought this was absolutely crazy and made sure to mention it. When she pulled away, Joe suggested that instead of walking the usual route, we take the opposite direction just to be adventurous. We knew the land well, we had a map, so I gave her sure, and off we went. They was fun and little sad, but in a good way. We found a bridge and sat on the edge, smoked a joint, and moved on. We had no fishing gear, but we brought some canned food and other stuff. Before night started to set in, we picked a spot to camp. It was a thick forested area, trees on every side of the train tracks, so you felt like you were in a tunnel. We brought small hammocks to sleep on, but before we set them up, we decided to do a little scouting of the perimeter. Now, this is what we used to do in the old days, too. We'd walk the area around a little bit to make sure some dude's house wasn't just over the hill, and we were actually camping in their yard. We walked maybe 100 or so feet into the woods and up a small incline. We figured if we didn't see anything from on top of this short hill, we'd be fine. But when we got to the top, we saw an old building down at the bottom, about 100 yards into the woods. It was barely visible. We pondered over what to do. We both assumed it was a sugar shack or something because they didn't appear to be a clear road into it. From where we were, there didn't look to be anyone in it either. All was quiet. No movement could be seen. No lights. We decided to walk a little closer just to make sure. We came down the hill very slowly, and as we neared the building, we saw it wasn't a sugar shack at all. It was an old church. It looked like it had been abandoned for years. It was a squat, sagging building whose wooden planks were almost black from years of moss and rot. A cross still stood on top of the place, also weathered black. None of the windows had glass, and there was no doors, just open doorways. We got close enough to see inside. There were rows of pews in the built-up section in front of a preacher to stand. We didn't go all the way in. We didn't want to be beyond all. There was no sign of anything else. No footprints, no paths, no rows. It was an abandoned church. We left immediately, went back up the hill to our spot we had fixed a camp. Having a hill between us and the church made us feel better, but we were still a little uneasy. We chalked it up to the natural creepiness seeing a church in the middle of the woods would elicit. Besides, at this point, it was dusk, and we decided to pick up our hammocks and go to sleep and move on. Early morning, night set in, and we landed our hammocks and shot the breeze. We began to hear there's something in the direction of the church. Our conversation about it went a little like this. Do you hear that? What is that? Sounds like people singing. And it did sound just like singing. We both slid right out of our hammocks and hunkered down, straining to hear more. We listened for a minute or two, and the singing continued, but it wasn't getting louder. Finally, we decided to creep back up the hill and see if we could spy where the sound was coming from. We would still move very quietly in the woods from the old days. It was second nature to us. The moon was barely out, and it provided enough light. So you wouldn't walk right into a tree, but it was near pitch black. We didn't use flashlights as we crept slowly up the hill, and we didn't talk. And we got to the top, we saw light in the distance. It was coming from the church, and the singing was coming from inside. Joe and I put our heads close together and had a rushed conversation that boiled down to, "Can you believe this?" The light looked to be like candlelight from the way it flickered. And then we tried. We couldn't make out what was being sung. It sounded like church music, but in another language. We sat and watched for a while, trying to see who was in there. But we only saw occasional shadows. We had no intention of getting closer either. We had about a football field length between us, and we aimed to keep it that way. The singing continued for a bit, and then it stopped. After that, a booming male voice began to chant. I was already freaked out, but this voice thoroughly scared the life out of me. It sounded like some Old Testament preacher you could see in movies, but again...
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
It was like he was speaking a different language because we couldn't understand a single word. Eventually, it got to where the single male voice would say something, and then a bunch of voices would answer in song. This lasted for a while, and then they all broke into this long, sustained wail that just kept getting louder. It got so loud and so disturbing that I covered my ears, and then it stopped. At this point, as I was just getting ready to say, "All right, let's get out of here," when Joe put a hand on my shoulder and his, "They're coming. They're coming out." We were far enough away that we couldn't make them out really well, but what we could see was a line of figures walk out the open doorway or holding hands in single file. We can see some of them had flashlights, and they began to sing again, and the light from the flashlights began to move towards us in the hill. We booked it back down to our campsite, grabbed our stuff, and ran to the tracks. Once there, we ran down the tracks in the direction we had come from. After a few minutes, we stopped and looked back. We saw lights coming down the hill. Then, they were moving erratically, like whoever was holding them was shaking them. We continued to run in spurts and walk as fast as we could. We eventually stopped seeing the lights and came to a road. Borrow map. We knew a small town was about 15 minutes down at 10. We walked there, got to our 24-hour gas station, and called my wife to come get us. My wife and other friends all just thought it was kids messing around, but I heard those voices, and they shouldn't sound like kids to me. Not sure who those people were, but it was definitely the creepiest thing that happened to me out in the woods.
Reactive attachment disorder, and as a result, I struggle with severe depression. However, I don't take any medication. I say that because I was going through one of the worst bouts of depression I had suffered in a year and a half, and I wasn't hallucinating because of the medication. It was Tuesday night, or Wednesday morning, October 13th to 14th. I had cried myself to sleep like I had done for however many hours before. When I woke up, it was 3:34 a.m. My cat Betty was walking around on the bed, and for some reason, my alarm on my phone was going off. I used the Sleep Cycle app, and the alarm was going off even though I had set it for 5:30 to 6 a.m. So I am frustrated that it decided to stop working correctly. Then I hear that my computer in the living room turns on. I thought that my other cat, Vader, must have knocked the mouse while wailing over the desk. Then I see the light turn on from the monitor. "What?" I thought. I was kind of pissed, so I started grumbling about the cats walking around, alarms going off unreasonably, and Vader knocking things about. Until I turned on the bedside lamp and saw both cats are lying at the end of my bed. Looking into my living room, I froze. I was so confused. I was trying to make sense of it when I heard my main door open, like the screen door first, then the front doorknob. Then I heard someone move across the carpet. Unlike the movies, I jumped out of bed as quietly as possible, wondering how the hell was someone entering my apartment, as I sure as hell locked the front door to the apartment. I silently stepped into the hall and peeked around the corner, my cats nonchalantly decided to ignore the obvious home invader, thief, or murderer that had entered our home. I looked around the corner, and the door was closed. The lights were off. The monitor was off. But I could hear the computer running. I stood there frozen and listened for any noise for God knows how long. But I could not make sense of it at all and couldn't sleep the whole night. It wasn't a dream. Maybe I was sleepwalking. I don't know. But I have never been afraid of my apartment. And at that very moment, I felt very afraid. Very much alone. It hasn't happened again. Or maybe it has. I just don't know.
19-year-old Faith Hedgepath was just as pure a spirit as one can expect to find in such a grim, dark world, and a member of the Native American Sapani tribe. Ever since she was a young girl, she had wanted to work with children to help the most vulnerable members of her society grow into happy, healthy, responsible people who could help make the world a better place. Faith knew that there were two career paths that she could take in order to make that a reality, being a pediatrician or a teacher. So she enrolled herself at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and was in the third year of her undergraduate studies in the year 2012. During the spring of that year, Faith took a break from her academic studies and took up residence in an off-campus apartment near the borders between Orange and Durham counties. Her roommates in this particular apartment complex were a girl by the name of Karina Rosario, who Faith had been very close friends with since the middle of her freshman year, and Karina's boyfriend, Eric Tokoi Jones. Karina and Eric's relationship was a tumultuous one at best, one that had a deep-running history of tension, violence, and abuse. In the end, Karina had to move out in order to escape the relationship, with Eric also moving out shortly afterward. However, it seems that Eric was violent and paranoid and attempted to break into the apartment twice after Karina had changed the locks, apparently having convinced himself that the whole thing was a ploy and that Karina had moved back in. But even though this was not the case and Karina had not moved back in, she and Faith continued to spend a great deal of time together, as one might expect from two close friends who had been through so much together. Faith had even driven Karina down to the county courthouse in order to get a restraining order against Eric, who was apparently enraged by the positive influence she had in his ex's life, and had threatened to harm her because of this on more than one occasion. Months later, during September of 2012, when Faith was living back on the college's campus, she attended a sorority rush at Alpha Pi Omega, a traditionally Native American sorority. Given that she had a paper to busy herself with that night, she departed the event just after 7 p.m., heading over to David Library with Karina and making sure to text her dad to let him know her whereabouts. The pair then left the library at around 11:30 that night, heading back to their campus apartment together before walking down to a dance club in downtown Chapel Hill called The Thrill. Security footage from the dance club shows the girls leaving at around 2 in the morning, with a neighbor of the girls reporting that she heard noises coming from their apartment at around 3, leading us to believe that they did in fact make it home safe. But what happened after that is very, very unclear. Records show that someone logged into Faith's Facebook at around 3 a.m., with a text being sent from her phone to her former boyfriend around 40 minutes later. "Hey B, can you come over here, please? Rosario needs you more. Aha. You know, please let her know you care." The ex-boyfriend, a boy named Brandon, read the message just after 4 a.m. and replied, questioning who sent the message. Karina's phone records show that Karina was trying to call Brandon at around the same time, and when he failed to answer, she attempted to call another boy named Jordan, who arrived at the apartment at around 4:30 in the morning to drive Karina to a friend's place where she stayed overnight. The following morning, Karina returned to the apartment with a friend, expecting to find Faith home alone but in good health. Yet when she walked through the door, the apartment was deathly quiet. She called out to Faith but received no reply, assuming her roommate had gone off to lectures or to the library. But Karina had a bad feeling in her gut. She hadn't heard from Faith all morning, and so just to be certain, She slid open her roommate's bedroom door and peered inside. What she saw next would haunt her for the rest of her life. Karina found Faith's dead body, partially naked and wrapped in a quilt. Neighbors would report hearing an ear-splitting scream around that time before 911 police dispatchers received an urgent call to attend the address in question. When the police arrived to investigate the scene, they found a large amount of blood splatter in the bedroom where Faith's body was located, along with an empty bottle of rum that also had a significant amount of blood on it, indicating that it was the murder weapon. Aside from the blunt force trauma to her head, Faith had all manners of cuts and bruises to other areas of her body, as well as dried blood under her fingernails. These were deemed to be defensive wounds from when she tried and failed to fight off her attacker. Horrifyingly, there was evidence of indecent assault, with a sizable amount of male DNA being found at the scene. After a distraught Karina was interviewed by police in the immediate aftermath of the body's discovery, her abusive ex-boyfriend Eric was considered the number one suspect in Faith's murder. Police seized his cell phone, finding texts that he had sent to a friend that very same evening that seemed to ask for forgiveness for what he was about to do. He also tweeted out a similar sentiment to his followers, implying he was about to do something terrible. The tweet read, "Dear Lord, forgive me for all my sins and the sins I may commit today. Protect me from the girls who don't deserve me, and the ones who wish me dead today." It seems the cops had bagged their man, an abuser whose social media status was tantamount to a confession. But shockingly, when Eric's DNA was compared to that which was found at the scene of the crime, it didn't match. Local police also compared the DNA to many of them who were found to be present at the dance club that Faith and Karina had attended that evening, but again, all samples came back as negative matches. A GoFundMe page was set up, crowdfunding a reward for information that peaked at $39,000, but still no usable leads or information was forthcoming. Interestingly, the 911 call made by Karina after she found the body has some under a considerable amount of scrutiny, with some suggesting that the call didn't come from Karina at all, but actually from the friend who accompanied her to the apartment that day, a girl named Marisol. Not only does the voice in the recording not sound like Karina, but the caller never once mentions Faith by name, only ever referring to the victim as my friend. Whoever made the phone call also lied to the dispatcher, telling them that she touched the body to check if Faith was still breathing. But when the body was analyzed for fingerprints, none matching Karina's or Marisol's came back, almost as if they were afraid to implicate themselves in Faith's murder. Police also recovered a handwritten note from the crime scene, one written in black ink on a piece of paper torn from a fast food takeout joint. The handwriting is scrawled and barely legible, so law enforcement aren't entirely sure if the note says, "I'm not stupid, jealous witch," or "I'm not jealous, stupid witch." The sloppy writing could be the result of two things: either whoever wrote it was drunk, or they had used their non-dominant hand in order to throw off handwriting analysis who might have been able to use it to identify the killer. It was also left at a crime scene where the victim's blood was splattered almost everywhere, yet the note showed no traces of having blood on it, proof that it was written somewhere else before being dropped near her body. The handwritten note has been something that has confused professional and amateur sleuths time and time again, and it has even been suggested that it's a complete red herring, left by the killer to simply confuse those that wish to get to the bottom of Faith's murder. Perhaps the most important piece of evidence we have from this case is taken from a butt dial made from Faith's phone at just past 1 a.m. The recording is around 3 minutes long and details a conversation made between Faith, another girl, and another guy. Audio experts were hired to enhance the audio. They claim that it clearly records Faith crying for help. It also records a male voice saying, "I think she's dying," while a female voice is saying, "Do it anyhow." An intense discussion that seems to commence, which ends in the unknown female becoming enraged. The unknown male and the unknown female can also apparently be heard using the names Eric and Rosie, and if that is true, there is no doubt that this is Karina Rosario and her abusive ex-boyfriend, Eric. Faith's father is convinced that the recording is of his daughter's death, yet the model of phone that she had used at the time of her death is incapable of time-stamping phone calls accurately, meaning that the recording could have been made at any point during the night. 4 years later, in an effort to definitively identify a suspect, local police released a phenotype of the killer, constructed using the sample of DNA left at the scene. The profile shows that the murderer is of mixed Native American and European ancestry, specifically a mix of Mexican, Colombian, and Iberian heritage, with small amounts of other South American and African ancestry.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
It is very likely that he would have been considered Latino and would have olive or tan skin, black hair, and few freckles. Despite the original pool of suspects numbering in the thousands, police have managed to whittle it down to just 10 potentially guilty parties. As has been previously stated, the obvious suspect, Eric Tecoy Jones, was not a DNA match, but local law enforcement confirmed that the murderer was almost definitely someone that Faith knew, even if he wasn't someone particularly close, a mutual friend or a classmate, for example. It also remains unclear if it was the work of a lone killer or if such a person had an accomplice. Karina Rosario, on the other hand, remains one of the most interesting and intriguing figures in this case. What would possess her to text or call two people so late in the night with such urgency? Why would she leave one of her best friends in the world, one that had been so good to her throughout her rocky relationship, all alone in an apartment that had been the target of repeated break-ins by a psycho ex-boyfriend? And what was going on with that bizarre 911 call she did or perhaps didn't make? As of 2019, Chapel Hill police were still in contact with her, despite the fact that she's attempted to escape the situation by moving out of North Carolina. According to them, Karina is still cooperative and answers all their queries to the best of her abilities. Yet, in the words of local reporter Tom Gasparali, it's true that the cops still believe that there's more Rosario can tell them, and it sounds to me like Karina has long been in their crosshairs as a key figure who knows much, much more than she says she does.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step 1. Go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step 2. Collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step 3. Play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games. All for free?
Step 4. Unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No